Rabbit, rabbit, folks. Happy Monday. This is Pam Stack, your host, and welcome to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I hope you all had a lovely weekend. It's wicked hot in Southwest Florida, 90 degrees with disgusting humidity. So it was a great weekend to stay in and read lots of books. Tonight, I'm speaking to the author of one of the books I read. The book is called The Magician. It was written by first-time novelist Dave Pupa, who goes by the moniker of D.A. Pupa if you look him up on Amazon. It's an interesting story about his book. You're going to learn all about it, but it's kind of a book within a book, and I really, really enjoy it. Dave and I spoke last week for a little while. He was on Wall Street for a long time, and somehow, I guess, lost his marbles and had to go and get a degree in clinical psychology, which I love. He's a practicing therapist, and decided to go ahead and write this book. So I'm really pleased to welcome a very, very talented debut novelist whose book is really getting a lot of buzz and a lot of five stars. My pleasure to introduce Dave Pupa. Hi, Dave. Welcome to Authors on the Air.
Hi, Pam. So honored to be on your show. Excited.
Thanks. I'm so glad that this space opened up for you, because after we spoke last week, I was really excited to talk about your book. This is a very unusual story in that it's kind of, like I said, a book within a book. An FBI – let me see if I can get this right, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong. An FBI profiler, Frank Cirillo, is reading a book – and in that book is the story of a killer who is never caught. And the story is very similar to a real-life case. So that is kind of the premise behind this book. Have I gotten that right?
More or less. You're in the James Patterson vein, a serial killer with a genius level IQ along the lines, and when I talk about genius, you're talking Leonardo da Vinci, Stephen Hawking level genius, like off the charts, once in a generation. And
right.
Basically, he murders the wife of the FBI profiler, Frank Cirillo, during Hurricane Sandy, and he, in essence, disappears and goes into hibernation. The FBI profiler falls apart. He kind of, goes off the deep end, and he gradually starts to put his life back together. He meets a female psychologist on the boardwalk nearby where he lives, and they develop a friendship. And like I said, as he begins to piece his life back together, she encourages him, because she's a psychologist, encourages him to start, living life again, doing the things that he always liked to do, and one of them is reading. So she encourages him to read this novel by this hot new novelist, and it's a thriller. It's actually the guy's second book, because when he read the first book, this was in the period where he was going off the deep end, and he was claiming that the author had something to do with the murder, and the FBI director and everybody, because there was no factual information in the book to indicate otherwise. They just thought he was, like you said, losing his marbles. And but again, so he's at a point, which is actually where my book begins, where he is saying, okay, I'm gonna do with what I'm being encouraged to do, live life again. So he starts reading this novel, the second book by this author, and as he's reading it, he discovers classified information tied directly to the death of his wife that only the killer or someone, that perhaps spoke to the author could have known about. And that's where the book picks up from there. He, contacts the FBI, and then they begin to look into, is it this novelist? Did the novelist get information from someone else? And it sort of flows from there.
What a fascinating concept. Now, I know you've never been an FBI agent, at least you didn't claim to be, and you're not a serial killer. And so then Wall Street doesn't have anything to do with the book. However, you are a psychologist now, which that's a subject we're going to talk about. I love hearing how Wall Street went to therapists to novelists. But This is not something you got from a client. I'm hoping for you to
no,
tell
no,
me.
No, 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 no. Thank God. Thank God. There's no personal ties there. It's just I'm a lover of thrillers and movies and, you know, James Patterson and that, you know, Thomas Harris, Silence of the Lambs, that type of genre.
Right.
And then again, I read a lot of other things, but certainly, you know, my story was rooted in that. And being a psychotherapist, I think that you're right. Not much. There's really nothing of Wall Street that's, you would say, part of the book, but certainly the psychotherapy side is, because as a therapist, you know, you're dealing with courses in psychopathology, you're dealing with patients, you're delving into the mind. And when you delve into the mind, it allows me to kind of delve into the characters and try to flesh them out, try to make them multidimensional so they're not flat, so that you can, you know, a reader could relate to them. Basically, I mean, I know a good story to me is something where I could escape into, where I feel like it's real, where I know the person, I know the character. And, you know, as readers, I think everybody relates to that, because in life we all experience happiness and sadness and joy,
sure,
and desire and all of those feelings. So, you know, I like to bring some of that and develop these, you know, the antagonist and protagonist, where they've each had their, you might say, scars from their past, and, you know, they're shaped by that. Obviously, the antagonist clearly had a lot more trauma that he experienced, and I guess what I'm trying to say is, as people, we're not just genetic makeup, we're also we're also tied to the environmental factors or circumstances that
right.
we experience that can send us off in certain directions.
Hold that thought right there, because I want to just go back, wind back the process a little bit and kind of recall our conversation from last week. I was so fascinated by your book. You and I spent a lot of time on the phone discussing this and some
Thank
other
you for
things.
That, by the way.
You're welcome. I was fascinated by it. You write a very character-driven story. It's a very fast-paced story. It's very hard-hitting and all, but it is, in fact, a very character-based story. And I want you to explain to listeners what you did to develop your Frank Sorello character first. And then I have a couple other questions along the way. I kind of know what I want to ask you, but I want to see where we go. How did you come up with your protagonist, Frank?
Well, a couple of things. One, I mean, again, having read a lot of these types of books, you know, you want your hero to be, you know, somebody that you could, you know, sort of almost like escape into, as if, like, you know, he's your legendary FBI profiler. And I did a lot of research. I've got, aside from reading, you know, like I said, the fiction novels, I did a lot of reading of FBI profilers. There was a book called Mindhunter. I forget the author's name, but it was a bestseller a couple decades ago. And it talked a lot about, you know, again, what it's like being an FBI profiler, what it's, you know, what they look for in serial killers, et cetera. I have two cousins who are district attorneys. I've got another cousin who's a forensic scientist. So I had a lot of good assets there to be able to tap into, to talk to them and give me, you know, some feedback. And then when I was just developing the character itself, I mean, I just tried to visualize things. I mean, to be honest with you, Frank Sorello, my brother's name is Frank. He's not in the FBI, but he's 6 foot six. And I kind of, you know, sort of imagined him a little bit and, you know, and described, you know, you take bits and pieces of people you know, and then you just sort of expand upon that with your imagination.
Well, it's a very fully fleshed out character, and I like that very much. Congratulations on that. Is the book you're talking about written by John Douglas by any chance?
Yes, it is.
Mindhunter.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes, it was published in 1996. I would imagine it's probably a really good resource for authors. And, of course, there's always the Internet. And then there's your own particular education and experience that all helped to bring this character together. So even further back than that, Dave, what made you want to write a book, and particularly this style of book? I understand because of your love of thrillers and mysteries, but why write a fiction book?
Well, let's start, Lisa, and go way back. I grew up in a family of voracious readers. We you know, read
That's
all
wonderful.
The time. I mean, I live near the beach, summertime especially. You sit on the beach and crack open a new book. And I, you know, everybody in the family has their own interests. Like I say, my mom's the nonfiction reader. My dad and I and brother kind of fall into the fiction side. My sister falls somewhere in between, but probably leans more towards the nonfiction also. I basically, going back now to, I guess, college, I took a creative writing class, and in the creative writing class, it was just an elective. I was working towards my finance accounting degree to work on Wall Street. And, I'd like to write, but, it was an elective. And in the class, the teacher told me, she said, you're very talented. And one of the assignments, I guess somewhere during the course of the year, was to write basically a synopsis or an outline for a novel. And in that class is where I actually sketched out the very, very basic idea of this novel. So, I procrastinated a few decades. But ultimately got
around. Oh, I just lost you. Are you there? Did you turn your head? There you go.
Yes,
now I'm
yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting. So you had this story in your mind for a while.
A really long time.
But you had an interest in writing prior to taking that elective class?
I wrote some poetry and, I like to write short stories, but nothing that I ever actually pursued from a professional standpoint or looking to get published. But again, the book idea, once I developed it, I must have talked about it a thousand times over the course of 20 years with my family members and friends saying, hey, what do you think about this as a book idea? And, what happened is, and I shared this with you when we spoke last week. Hurricane Sandy happened, and and around that time frame, I had just begun to start my private practice. I'd already made the shift from Wall Street, went back to school full time, graduated, worked in a couple internships, and ultimately moved, like I said, into private practice. Now, when I start a private practice, you're basically starting out with no clients and working your way up the ladder. So I had a lot of free time, Pam, and because of that free time, I was in the kitchen one day with my entire family, and my mom basically said, "Hey, Dave, you've been talking about this book for forever. You've got all this free time. Why not, see if you could do something with it?" And I thought to myself when I actually answered that question in my head, I said, "Well, there's really no reason now. If I'm ever going to do it, now's the time." And this had just been, like I said, around the time of Hurricane Sandy. Now we live in Monmouth County, which is where the hurricane hit directly. And, we've had hurricanes here over the years, and we've always, never left our homes. And we decided to all stay home. I mean, we're not right near the beach, but we're a couple miles inland. But regardless, I remember that night, my wife was probably, well, she was mad at me for staying because it was scary. I mean, the winds and, were unbelievable
feeling.
And trees
sure.
coming down, the power went out, and it was – And you couldn't contact anybody, and you were really it was a fearful night, and that sort of is actually where the true anchor point for my story came, because I thought to myself, as scary as that night was, what would make it scarier? What if a serial killer were in your house and you had no way of escaping, no way of leaving your house, no way of contacting anybody? And like I said, that kind of set an anchor point for the story.
Well, it's a brilliant story, by the way, and I could see how that would heighten the ratchet up the tension quite a bit. So you write this book, and you're thinking, "Oh, that's pretty good. So I'll just go ahead and throw it out there, and surely it'll become a instant overnight success." And then reality strikes, and you say, "Well, wait a minute now. That isn't quite how it works, especially when you are new into this crazy world of publishing." Did you have a lot of professional advice to help you? Because rarely do I see books that have so many great reviews And they're not every one of the people that, you know, you haven't paid your patients or any of your clients, and you haven't paid your family to go ahead. And when you have legitimate reviews there, I went and looked at all of them. He has 89% five-star reviews. That's amazing for the amount of readers you've had. Congratulations on that. So did you know what you were doing, or was this kind of a learn-as-you-go situation? Because so many debut novelists really do want to do this, or writers want to become debut novelists and never navigate the straits. How did you do it?
Well, let's start with, you said, did I have any professional help? I had exactly 0.0 professional help. I actually did everything you could possibly do backwards. I learned along the way. When I first finished the book, the manuscript, I took a picture of it and I sent it out to my family, said the manuscript's done. I was all excited. And of course, like you said, you have visions of grandeur. I mean, I was thinking, sure. Okay, I think I wrote a good book. I wasn't quite sure, but I had a couple things along the way which encouraged me before I ever did get any reviews. And I think back to a little bit about that. And the first moment where I thought, okay, aside from my own head of believing it might be good, I remember being at my mom and dad's house in the summertime near their pool, and my aunt and uncle were visiting, and it was like maybe three quarters through the manuscript, and it was just, you know, printed out on paper. And my aunt started reading the book, and she was an English teacher, and she started reading it. And then my uncle, who was also a teacher, they're both retired now, and he started reading like behind her. And they kept reading and kept reading for well over an hour. And then they, you know, we had lunch. And at lunch, my uncle finished lunch before my aunt. He went to pick it up. And my aunt actually said, no, you're not going to do that, Matt. I don't want you to get ahead of me. And I don't want to have to wait for you. So that made me feel good because I thought, okay, even I know they're my aunt and uncle. And I think they would say it's good anyway, but if they didn't really like it, people could make excuses. You know, they say, oh, I've got something to do, and they didn't. And then later on, there was a big component of the book, which also we discussed, set at Princeton. And the part of Princeton University, I found out when I went there to do research on Princeton, I had to get approval because they told me they're trademarked since I was writing about the university. So I had to meet with the Dean of Communications, Special Projects Assistant, and when the manuscript was done, I had to submit it to them, and they were either going to reject it and say I'd have to use a fictitious name, or if they approved it, and they did approve it, and I got a letter from Princeton saying you did a wonderful job capturing the essence of Princeton, which is, again, the first part where I thought, okay, I did something good. So when I had that idea of delusions of grandeur, it was in my head. Princeton said my book is good, so I was feeling really good about myself. So I started, you know, I went to the internet, like everybody now does nowadays, and I went to Google. You know, Google is you know, your knowledge base now, it seems.
Absolutely.
And I typed in, you know, what do you do when you've written a book? And I started to look into the traditional publishing route, and I hadn't even thought about, at this point, self-publishing. And I started looking into it. And the thing I discovered was that, you know, number one, you cannot just submit a manuscript to a publishing house. They'll just reject it. They'll go in their garbage before they even look at it.
Right,
you have to find
the flesh pile.
Right, you have to find a literary agent. And then you have to find a really good literary agent, because if you don't find a good literary agent, they might send your book to the wrong editor at the wrong house, and once you're rejected by the house, you're a blanket rejection. And then I thought, well, I don't know any good literary agents. I mean, who do I pick? And that started to feel a little intimidating. So I started looking into that, like, well, what literary agents, like, represent, let's say, Thomas Harris? And, you know, you look into that and you see, well, we're not taking any new clients at this point. So that feels like a dead end. So then I still was going to go ahead and approach that route. But what I started to read more is I was shocked to realize that, you know, when everybody gets their cut, the distributors, the marketers, the literary agents, the publishing houses, through the traditional route, I was, you know, basically learned that the amount you earn on a book as the author is not quite what you imagine. Then on top of that, they do not promote typically a debut new author. I was under the impression if you get signed, they're going to be like a big campaign and your book's going to be all over the bookshelves. And once I started reading that doesn't happen, I started thinking, well, what in the heck am I going to do this? If they're not going to promote me, I'm going to take a lower percentage. I'm going to lose rights to my book. And right at that time was when E.L. James had done Shades of Grey, and I started to read a little bit about her background and how she started a blog and initially more or less self-published, and then once the book started to attract a ton of attention, she then shifted and had the leverage and went to the major publishing houses. So
right.
At that point, I started to look into the self-publishing end. And basically, I did tons of research on doing everything all yourself, buying ISBNs, finding a printer, doing all of that, or utilizing an author services company. And ultimately, that's the route I chose because it made it easy for me. I was intimidated by everything else, so I never approached any of the traditional houses. I never approached a literary agent, and I self-published. So then when I self-published and the book arrived, again, I did everything backwards. All you future authors out there, listen, don't do this. I did it backwards. You need to build a social media campaign first. You need
first.
Exposure. You want to build a brand and start to, target basically the day the book gets released. You want everybody buying it on day one. Because, right. As I'm sure you know, Pam, velocity of sales, I've learned, is important, which basically means for all you fledgling authors out there, it's better to sell 24 books in 1 hour and then none the rest of the day than one book an hour for 24 hours because there's
absolutely
a big
true.
Velocity of sales early, and then your Amazon ranking and the algorithms are higher, and then they'll start promoting you, and it goes from there. So we ended up throwing a family party with family and friends. And basically at that point, everybody came, bought the book, signed my autographs with people I know, which felt very weird. It's like, you know me, why do you need my autograph? But it was kind of funny. And I guess what happened from there, Pam, is people started, aside from just family and friends, people really enjoyed the book, and they started to tell their friends told their friends, which ultimately led to one of my friends was sitting next to a book blogger on the beach in the summertime, and the book blogger asked, what are you reading? She asked about it, contacted me. The book blogger really liked the book. I leveraged that review into another blogger. Then I got a review by Social Life magazine in the Hamptons. And it kind of sort of snowballed a little bit from there. And right now,
but
like I said,
you have a really interesting story about meeting someone and someone really big, because of your lack of understanding about the way books are sold and published and promoted and all. So I think it's really interesting if you wouldn't mind telling that little story, because it's a huge opportunity that very rarely comes along for anyone, much less for a debut novelist. I love this story.
It's either Howard Stern or Mary Higgins Clark.
Mary Higgins Clark. The other one I don't care about. Not so much.
Okay. Well, it was fun meeting him too. I have to admit, I was starstruck with that. What happened is about 2 weeks ago, I was going to get my hair cut because I had a speaking engagement. I was chosen to be a guest speaker for a library fundraiser in Pennsylvania, and it was a couple hundred people, and it was my biggest speaking engagement at this point, so I wanted to look good. So in between my patients, I had about an hour and a half, and I ran over to the girl who always cuts my hair, and I had about an hour and a half before I had to get back to my office. And when I walked in, I asked the girl, Erin. I said, hey, Erin, do you have any time to cut my hair? And she said, yeah, just give me a minute. And just as she had said she would, a woman had walked in and asked me kindly. She said, would you mind terribly if I can take your spot? Because I really have an engagement and I don't have much time. And I paused for a minute and I thought, you know what, I've got some time. Let me quick grab something to eat real fast and I'll come back. So I actually gave up my spot and I said, sure. And as it turns out, when I came back, that woman turned out to be very, very good friends with Mary Higgins Clark. And she lives, one of her homes is in the shore area near where we live. And she said, I understand you wrote a book. I guess my hairdresser told her about my book. And she, again, told me about her relationship with Mary Higgins Clark, and my jaw dropped. And I was like, oh, my God, that, I was like, what an opportunity just to meet her. I would love to hear her advice and her knowledge and learn from her because, like I said, I'm learning along the way. And the woman said, well, let me take your name and number. And so I gave it to her. And, you know, I didn't really honestly think anything was really going to come of it. And as it turns out, I got a call. She went over the weekend and was with Mary Higgins Clark and told her about me. And apparently she's a very wonderful, gracious woman because I got a phone call and was told when she gets back from her book tour, I'm invited over to her house to share a glass of wine and I guess just get to know each other and hopefully I could absorb some of her greatness. it's a thrilling, thrilling story.
That is you know, one of those moments where when I try to say kindness is everything, there's always a pay it forward moment. You did something really nice. I wish I could say that, you know, that this happens to a lot of book authors. I think it just happens to a lot of nice people. So snaps to you for doing something really, really kind. And I think you were rewarded for it, you know, in the karmic scheme of things in the universe.
Well, I'm just thrilled to meet her. I mean, I can't even believe it, you know.
I think it's magnificent. And talk about writing some terrific thrillers. She definitely is the one to talk to. I have a young lady named Natasha who's been waiting on the phone who wants to say hello. So let's go ahead and hear what she has to say. Hi, Natasha. You're live on the air with Dave Pupa.
Oh, hi, and thank you for taking my call. Dave, love the book, as you know. We've talked about it several times. Just would like to reflect on a couple of things. First of all, I remember in grade school you writing a parody of a Yellow Submarine by the Beatles. I think it was called Purple Battleship. And yes, and our English professor read it out loud. It was really hilarious. You're a very comical writer, so I hope that you bring more of that into your future novels, which you certainly did bring into The Magician. Secondly, I was always very jealous of the fact that you had a typist in your family. I had to type all my papers as we were growing up. But anyway, my question is, I have two novels, both nonfiction, so burning inside of me. And you have a private practice. I have a private practice. I'm just wondering how it is that you've been able to set an appropriate time aside to really focus on your art while maintaining your practice to get the artistic juices flowing and making all of this happen. I've been finding this a tremendous challenge. I have the outline written and I've rewritten it and rewritten it for both of these books, but I can't get to the stage that you've just expounded upon, which is all of the work behind the story. So can you give any advice on how to make it happen? What's the internal mechanism that you've triggered to make it happen?
All right,
that's a great
Natasha. First off, I want to say this is one of my grade school friends. Love you,
how
Natasha.
Lovely.
Thanks for listening to the show and have very great memories. But anyhow,
Battleship. We're going to be looking for that one. That might be a children's book, right?
Yes, I am a big Beatles fan. But anyhow, to answer the question, Natasha, I would say once you have the outline, it is life is brutal. There's so many time commitments dragging you in 45 different directions. It can feel overwhelming. But the only thing I would say to do to get beyond the stage you're at, because I was there too. And again, don't forget, I procrastinated for 2 decades. I had my outline in my head going back to college. So you're way ahead of the game if you didn't develop your storyline then. But what I would say to do is sit down and write the first word and then the first sentence. The first sentence will become the first paragraph, which will become the first chapter, so on and so forth. And here's the other thing. Don't try to write the perfect sentence or the perfect paragraph initially. You could always go back. You get out your idea, get it flowing, and then go back and reread it and edit and edit and clean it up as you go along. Because if you try to write that perfect, again, first paragraph, you will paralyze yourself. Excuse me, because that's kind of what I did. So I would just say if you have the outline, just flow with the idea. And I kind of – when I wrote, I envisioned, and I told this to Pam and lots of people. I sort of envision writing a book as a taking a cross-country trip for the first time. You have a roadmap where you're going to start and where you're going to end. And you kind of have destination points tagged along the way. But as you're driving, you don't really know where you're going to go, and you find a place that seems interesting. And that's where you sit down and you start building, you know, you stay in that area for a while. And then sometimes you'll reach an area where you'll be like, this doesn't feel right. I want to move along. The writing process is the same way. Just kind of, you know where you're starting, you know where you're going, just get in the damn car, you know, turn on the ignition and write those first few sentences, and then see where it takes you, and then go back and fine tune it.
That's an interesting point. I want to say to you, Natasha, that a lot of the authors who come on this show always have the same problem, whether they're debut novelists or if they're well established and have written 20 or 30 books. Excuse me. But what I will say is that a lot of them tell me writing shorter chapters really makes a difference. But most importantly, you want to get all your words on paper. Don't worry about it. Just throw everything on there. You'll go ahead and take the ones that don't stick and get rid of them later on. You know,
I appreciate that. Maybe I'll be a guest on your show one day with my first novel. So that's really good advice. I think it's the first sentence that's been troubling me for both.
Just sit down and write it. Just sit down and write. Put your butt in a chair. Commit yourself to a time, whether it's early in the morning or late at night or any time you can. Listen, I have writers who tell me they take their lunch break and they pull their work truck off the side of the road and whip out their notebook and just start writing. So there are those who have very inconsistent work hours or who juggle family as well as full-time job, and you know, they manage to do it. So if you're committed to it, get the words on the paper. You'll do great. I wholeheartedly hope that you come on my show one day. Okay.
And call me after the show.
I'm going to put you back on hold so you can continue to listen, Natasha. And thank you for your questions. They're very insightful. Thank you. So that was nice that your friend called in. You've mentioned to me and have said this, that you already have in mind, or you've already begun the sequel or the next part of this book, book in a trilogy maybe.
Mm-hmm.
How far along are you with that book?
About halfway. I plan to be done by my internal goal, and I've pushed it off a million times, but I really kind of I have it in my head now pretty clean where I want to go, and it took a while. But I hope to have it done before the anniversary when my first book came out, which was in July. So I'm hoping to have the second book released before the end of July of this summer. And the book is a sequel. It picks up exactly where the first book ended, and then the story will go on from there.
Do you have a working title for the book, Dave?
Well, the working title as of right now, and I've gotten a lot of positive and negative feedback on this, so it very well may change. But the working title is The Resurrection. My mom and dad don't like it. They feel it's you know, certainly let's put it this way, been overdone. But in some ways, I think there's a reason why the title's appropriate. But you know, like I said, it's a working title.
You could always go to your social media sites and put it out there and ask your readers and followers what they think, and they'll an autographed set of books from you if they choose the winning title. Who knows?
That's a good idea.
And readers are pretty savvy. You know, they pick up on a lot of cues that that the writer himself often misses. You know, a lot of titles come directly from the prose, so one never knows. I want to ask you how your work as a psychotherapist has helped and hindered you as a writer.
Well, helped is an easy one. Like I said, you're dealing with, people's thoughts and what goes on, inside their heads and the things that affect them and experiences and certainly trauma, because trauma can have huge impacts on people in many ways, depending on the severity of that trauma. So I took a lot of that knowledge, and like I said, I helped to try to develop and build characters and taking into account their life experiences to, allow readers to emotionally connect to them, sort of like, hey, I could relate to them based upon, not necessarily the experiences of having gone, through murder, but trauma isn't always murder. Trauma can be come in so many forms.
Absolutely.
And, so I applied a lot of that. As far as hindering, that's a good question. I've never really actually thought about that. I guess at times maybe, flow is important to me when I read. And, the books that I've enjoyed the most are always books that, again, the flow feels right. It's like I want to turn the next page. I don't reach that point where all of a sudden I'm reading a page and someone's describing a bed sheet for, three paragraphs. Now,
right,
unless the book
right.
is about a bed sheet, I don't really care about that. So sometimes maybe I find myself maybe going, becoming a little too repetitive at times where I'm drilling home a point to sort of bring that psychological piece into play. And I kind of want to hone that a little bit and try to, I guess, because going back, if I could rewrite magically my book, and I really thank God, everybody seems to have really, really enjoyed it. But as a writer, you're so critical of yourself. There are things now looking back that I wish I had tweaked. Again, I sort of understand what Natasha was saying. You read something,
sure.
You're like, meh, So that
kind of
might be the hinder there, where it might impact flow if I get a little too repetitive there. And like I said, I think I've cleaned that up pretty good, but that would be my enemy, I guess.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. I think that you're going to be very critical on yourself the more that you write. It seems that authors are often more critical of themselves as they go forward and write more books. So, interesting. I want to ask you, and this is just totally, you don't have to be specific. This is a yes or a no question. Have you ever spoken to someone who gives you the creeps?
Have I? Yes, one time. I can think of one person. Thankfully, nothing ever happened. More often, it's just people I feel, very empathetic towards, because some of the experiences you'll hear are truly awful and circumstances that people have overcome. But one time there was somebody that felt just off to me, but who knows?
I was curious about that. Let me ask you something else. Did you enjoy, or what did you enjoy the most about writing this book? I guess I should say. What did you enjoy the most?
During the writing or at any point, meaning before or after?
Well, in writing the book, you have to encapsulate that in whatever way, that encompasses whatever you think it does.
Okay, I guess it's just a thrill, just sort of as you're creating something. And as I wrote, again, having been a big reader in my own head, and whether, being a psychotherapist, I was wondering at times, am I being delusional? Because there are points where I was thinking to myself, this sounds pretty good. Because I visualize things like a movie when I'm writing. Like I said, I'm a big reader and a big movie goer. So I always tried to picture it on the big screen. Like what would this look like? And when I wrote certain scenes, there's one particular scene but one I don't want to divulge because I think it's a kind of a critical part of the story. But one scene where there's this killer basically chasing down this runner in the Albany Pine Bush, which is a very desolate area up in upstate New York. And when I wrote that and I finished it, it was a rush because I just thought, okay, this was – I felt that I was there, and then I reread it and I said – This is it was something I was proud of. So I guess when you write something good, the feeling of feeling proud, you know, and then of course when you get feedback that supports it, it's just, you know, it's 10 times better. And I've learned, occasionally you do have the occasional person that hates your work, you know, and that was the first negative review. I was like, like a punch in the stomach.
Right. Well, you have to grow a thick skin for sure if you're going to write books. And the second thing is you have to expect a troll review, which is a one star. So congratulations. You've had your one star cherry popped. You're okay now. It should never traumatize you again. so that's something every author learns to go through, and sometimes not gracefully at all, unfortunately. I want to take a moment to remind everyone that this is a trademark copyrighted podcast, solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. I am speaking to first-time novelist who's getting rave reviews on his first book called The Magician. This is under his pen name. It's D.A. Pupa. This is Dave Pupa with me tonight. Dave, we're almost at the end of our show, but I do have something that I like to do with with all of my, especially new authors to the show. It's called Final Five. It's five quick questions and five quick answers. Are you game to play?
Yes, and then would I be able to give a quick shout out to three people?
Should give your shout out right this minute. That's more important.
All right. First off, I'd like to thank Ramo Strada, who did the graphic artwork for my book. I mean, he's incredibly talented. I'd like to thank Tessa Muller. She's the actual artist who did the painting. If you see the cover of my book, her painting is inside the hand of the book, which Ramo Strada, you know, did the graphic artwork. And then I'd also like to thank L.J. Ganser. He's a three-time Audi Award winner that has been on the show Law & Order. And he graciously decided to narrate my book for, you know, Audible. So the book just this past week came out on Audible, Amazon, and iTunes. So L.J. Ganser is a phenomenal narrator, and I want to thank him. So,
terrific.
My family and wife. I love her.
Very good. Well, that's good to know. I'd kick you off if that wasn't the case. No, not really. So my first question to you is, let me think. I already know what kind of music you like. I already know what you do and in your former life. Who are you? Whose book are you reading right now?
Whose book am I reading right now? I'm reading The Lion's Game by Nelson DeMille. I read Gold Coast and a couple of his that I really loved. And so I'm currently reading that.
He's a very funny man. He's been a guest on this show, and I really enjoyed talking to him. Very, very delightful man. I was really very, very honored that he came on the show. Do you have any quirky writing habits? Like, you know, does it have to be completely silent? Do you have to burn a candle? I mean, you write standing up? Do you close your office?
I like to be somewhat isolated and quirky. As far as writing, I tend to come up with a lot of ideas, whether it be in the shower or when I'm sleeping at night. I can't tell you the number of times I get out of bed, and my wife isn't too happy about this, so thanks, Lise. I literally jump out of bed, jot down the idea sometimes at 2-3 o'clock in the morning so I don't forget it, and then crawl back into bed. So that's kind of a quirky thing that happens a lot when I'm really writing.
I'm going to give you a little tool so you don't jump out of bed and make Lise crazy anymore. You can get yourself a little digital recorder and leave it right by your nightstand, and then you just flip that baby on and talk into it and turn it back off.
She'll still be mad that I'm talking, but I'll have to whisper.
Oh, okay. Then you can text yourself a message or send yourself an email on your smartphone.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay. Thanks, Pam.
Yeah, there are all kinds of things you can do. Don't make the wife crazy. Are any of your other family members creative?
I would say they all have – well, creative. My mom was an artist and a good writer when she was younger. I remember seeing some paintings she did, and she wrote on the high school newspaper. My dad is more of an analytical mind, as is my brother. My sister's creative. She likes to write, and she has her own desire to write her own book. She's also a psychologist, but her book would probably be more you know, drama or you know, she's rooted in nonfiction, but she likes stuff like Angela's Ashes and books like that. So her book would certainly be different than mine. But she's a very good writer, and she helped. I mean, everybody in my family did help, so I can't say they all have a piece of creativity, because my brother certainly input some ideas and gave me some interesting thoughts when I was sort of shaping my book. So I want to say everybody does. I don't want to get anybody mad at me. Love them all.
You're so funny. How diplomatic of you. That's a therapist in you talking, though, I have to say. Do you think you'll ever want to write outside the thriller genre?
I was thinking about that, and I would probably say yes if my writing career really, you know, takes off in the way I hope it does, because at some point I think you'll start to run out of fresh ideas if you stay with certainly the same characters. I think at some point you have to kill off, you know, even if it's a protagonist. Like James Patterson, as much as I love him in Alex Cross books, I think his best work certainly was in the beginning in that series, and as you go along,
sure.
I mean, it becomes repetitive, so I think, yes. You know, I would like to sort of go outside that thriller aspect, because I have a few ideas that, I occasionally jot down for future books. Hopefully I will get there. And Mary Higgins Clark is certainly an inspiration, because she's still writing bestsellers in her 80s, which is mind-boggling to me, so...
Yep.
I certainly would hope I do that.
When was the first time you were comfortable enough to say you were an author versus a writer?
I guess the first time I got a review that was outside of friends and family. I always like to joke, and I do joke this, but it's true. I think I said this to you, if I had written the book called The, and the entire book was The for 100 pages, my mom and dad would say it's the best The book ever.
Right.
So I think, you know, I kind of discounted a lot of the family and friend reviews initially, which would have probably been the first 10, 20 reviews. But then when I remember reading the very first review, that I kind of went to everybody and said, hey, do you know this person? And no one knew the person. And it was, you know, a 5-star review. And I was like, wow, exciting, and that's kind of when I felt, okay, that was my validation to some degree. And then you know, the more reviews you get, certainly you feel more and more validated. So all the people out there, if they like my book, please write positive reviews. If you feel you have something negative to say, oh well, go ahead and do it. I just hope that's not the case.
There you go. Unfortunately, you're going to hear from them whether you want to or not, one way or the other, which I think is kind of a good thing. My final question to you is, tell me what's something on your bucket list.
I think, probably scare the hell out of, especially my mom and dad. I think my wife probably, you know, who knows, but I would love to skydive. I think that would be a cool thing. I love roller coasters and, you know, go to Great Adventure all the time. And I just think skydiving would be one hell of an experience. You know, the thought of jumping out of a plane is a bit scary, but I've seen people, you know, that have done it, or I know people that have done it, and they said it's such a rush. So that would be a bucket list thing.
All right, Dave. Well, I'm so glad that I'm not living close to you and we're not best buddies, because I'd never go jump out of a plane. And that would remain on your bucket list and not mine. Thank you so much for being with me tonight and discussing your path to your first and might I say successful novel. I wish you much success, and I hope that you come back when the next book is out and tell me how it was different for the second book, will you?
I would love to do that, and I want to very, very much thank you. And I can't tell all the listeners out there how gracious Pam was, because I reached out to her out of the blue, and she gave me her number, and we talked and chatted for well over an hour, and she gave me so many insights and her experiences.
You.
And I can't thank you enough for that.
Oh, but please, it's my pleasure. I'm one of those girls who doesn't own a television. I've been a reader all my life. I read about 400 books a year. So people who write books are my celebrities, and it's always an honor and a pleasure to meet a new one coming onto the market. I wish you so much success, Dave. Really.
Thank you, Pam.
Even when you're too big for my show anymore, still come back anyway, okay?
Well, from your voice to God's ears.
There you go. It's a deal. Thank you so much, D.A. Pupa, or Dave Pupa. His book is The Magician. You can find it on your online retailer, and I would suggest you go and get it. Want to remind everyone, tomorrow I have another debut novelist. His name is Tom Fox. The book is Dominus. So if you like reading Simon Toyn and that other guy, Dan Brown, although I think this is 20 times better, he's going to be on my show tomorrow night. And Wednesday, another debut novelist, Alex Gilley, who I'll be speaking to from Sydney. Have a nice evening, Dave. Natasha, thank you for calling in. Dave, you and I will talk again soon, won't we?
Yes, we will, Pam.
Have a good night, and thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night. And thanks for being with me tonight, folks. Have a really great night. Go out and get Dave's book. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.